Shut up! The footy's on Triple M!
This is a Triple M footy news update.
This is massive, this story.
Got a little exclusive.
With Tom Brown.
It's Monday, the 27th of September, and as D's fan bask in the afterglow of a 57-year premiership drought broken at long, long last, it's time for another edition of Triple M footy's news update with Tom Brown. My name's Rudy, I've got Tom here on the phone, still in WA, and Tommy, what a performance from the D's.
Unbelievable performance from the Demons. 17 goals to 1 in the final phase of the game. It's the best 74-point drubbing I've ever seen. It was absolutely enthralling. I reckon that if the Bulldogs had kicked one more goal when they were 19 points up, they would have been in a commanding position and probably hard to beat. That's how unusual this result is. But whether it was the Bulldogs' legs, whether it was the fact that Daniel ragdolled Max Gawn, and whether that provoked Melbourne, it was the subsequent passage of play after that that was absolutely the turning point from a scoring perspective. But the Demons just got on top, and it was serious, serious belief. I mean, you know, at halftime, Max Gawn drew upon the words of Neil Danaher and thoughts of Neil Danaher. I'm led to believe that Mark Williams played a big role at halftime in terms of just drilling down on the basics to the group, you know, laying your tackles, making them stick, you know, all the basics, all the selfless acts that Melbourne are just renowned for. So I think Choco paid dividends in spades. Not that he already had. And the rest is folklore. I mean, Christian Petrarca, the way you can stand up in a tackle, you know, there's obvious comparisons now to Dustin Martin. I know I'm not taking anything away from Dustin Martin, but you could argue that Petrarca is more consistent throughout a game. I know Martin probably hits the scoreboard a bit more, but I mean, you're talking about just incredible performances. Bailey Fritsch plucked from effectively the Yarra Valley League after missing out repeatedly on drafts. I mean, we'll get to Melbourne's recruiting. I want to talk about that shortly, but it was just an incredible, incredible game and night, and it breaks a 57-year drought for Melbourne. I mean, it means so much to Neil Danaher, to the Steins family, you know, to Dean Bailey's family, all these tragedies that Melbourne at the Broadbridges, all these tragedies that Melbourne have experienced, and all this history, Gary Lyon, you know, presenting the cup. It was just an incredible situation. I think it was certainly morally the right result in the end, and Melbourne delivered in spades.
Yeah, it's, as you mentioned, there's just so many great stories to come out of this.
Even Michael Hibbo, he lost his brother last year. I spoke to him in the rooms. I love Hibbo. He's a really great bloke. And for him to score his first flag at his age, and Ben Brown, I mean, dropped by North Melbourne, effectively sacked this time last year. Sure, clubs were interested in him, but he had to troop around and speak to various clubs, and Goody was the one that convinced him that he could be part of it. Stephen May wanted success, left the Suns, and it doesn't always work out like that. And now he scored a flag, you know, a bit like what happened to Tom Lynch. So, and plus he had a 6-centimetre tear in his hamstring and had a scan and told the doctors, I don't want to really know the result because it's not good psychologically. I'll just play. And in the second quarter, this will go down to footy folklore, it's been reported over the weekend, sort of basically felt a twinge again and just kept going. I mean, it's just so many unbelievable stories.
Yeah, incredible stories everywhere. And I agree with you. When the Dogs were 19 points up, it sort of felt like that outstreet fought Melbourne, but Melbourne just almost like gave them more power that they were so far behind, they just blew up. But Tommy, what we all want to know is how was the party over there in Perth?
Unbelievable. So I did my live cross last night outside the Cottesloe Hotel, tracked them down at the party there. And to Melbourne's credit, they've been a bit tight on the media access. They invited me in and I had a great chat to Gary Pert and witnessed the party. The highlight, clearly, which I got to see in person, which is just awesome, was Simon Goodwin up on Max Gawn's shoulders. I mean, that was a sight to behold. They had the DJ going and they were obviously in a segregated area next to the bar. And the pub was a bit funny about them getting too loud on the DJ. But the players were just absolutely going off. It was unbelievable. The night before, of course, they'd sung, Give Me a Man After Midnight, I think, which is ABBA, obviously. Yeah. Give Me a Premiership After Midnight. They used Optus as their nightclub sort of the night before because I was staying up at Joondalup. So they couldn't easily sort of get from Optus back out to a nightclub then back to sort of like Joondalup. So they basically just stayed at Optus, and I think they did go to one nightclub in Northbridge. They had a seriously late night. and then they had a bit of a veiled go at the Dogs, didn't they? Because the Dogs were singing that song in the room.
Freed from Desire.
Freed from Desire after their, well, they say they do it after their wins. They certainly did it after their win over in Adelaide. And I think it was Melbourne's way of saying, we'll just do the singing and the talking when the deal's done. And it was a bit of a go, wasn't it? So that was very funny.
Cheeky little one there. I don't mind it. I can understand.
You don't mind it?
Well, I don't mind. I can understand why Dogs fans and players might be, but you know, might disagree.
Back on the celebrations last time, I spoke to Gary Pert, and he was just saying, you know, Melbourne's had so much bad luck and so much, I guess, misfortune, tragedy, but also from a footy performance perspective, ordinary football performances, and he had to sort of reprogram the club that they could win a final, and not just they could win a final, they could win the premiership. And he said he told the players on Saturday night that there's no taking this away from them now. They'll always be, you know, premiership players, and there's just such a, you know, I guess a reset in the mindset of the group. It was incredible. But the party last night was serious. Simon Goodwin was, I think he's a bit of a two-pot screamer. He's pretty light and pretty fit. I don't think he's great on the beers. He'll have a sore head this morning, but it was a good party.
He brought up Simon Goodwin, Tommy. I wanted to discuss that with you. He, at the start of this year, was under a fair bit of pressure as a coach, and he leaves the year with the Premiership Cup held aloft.
Well, Gary Pert clarified yesterday that they'll obviously now move to do a 2 or 3 year deal on a new contract for Simon Goodwin, which is an obvious move considering he's their Premiership coach, but a good one. In terms of sliding doors, my understanding is they had an emergency board meeting earlier in the year where Simon Goodwin's future and discussion was raised. There were some concerns about whether he was the right coach. And I won't name specific people because I don't want to do that, but it's fair to say that the overwhelming majority of the board's response was, you've got to be kidding, we're going to back Simon Goodwin in. And there were some subsequent board changes also following some of those discussions. So, you know, a sliding doors moment. Melbourne had an emergency board meeting at the start of the year where there were some concerns in regards to Goody's contract status and coaching situation. And the majority of the board, to their absolute credit, said, look, this is a joke. We're not going down this path, and back Simon Goodwin. And I think Kate Rothy was instrumental, the current president, in that process.
I wanted to discuss Kate Rothy as well, Tommy. In the notes you've sent me for today, you said, is Kate Rothy Ted Lasso?
Yeah, I ran into Kate Rothy in the fish and chip shop yesterday during their celebrations. And I probably shouldn't quote Kate directly, but she did have a good conversation with me where she said some of her friends are joking that she's the modern Ted Lasso. She's quite pleased with their success. And she's looking at Peggy O'Neill's record now in terms of the number of premierships. And Kate Rothy is very, very ambitious and very, very determined. And I don't think she thinks this will be the last time that she gets to present the Cup. So I think Melbourne's got a strong leader and a confident one in Kate. So good luck to her.
Yeah, hard to argue with her optimism there. They've looked like pretty well set up for success.
They haven't got any players above 200 games. They're that age bracket, 25, 26, and they're relatively young. So there's no reason why Melbourne now can't win 2 or 3 flags. Now, it's harder to do than to talk about it. Easier said than done. But look, they're in a very, very good position.
Now, you wanted to shine a light on a couple of lesser-known names at the D's, instrumental in success. So explain to me, please, who Jason Taylor and Tim Lamb are, Tommy.
Well, Tim Lamb and Jason Taylor are effectively their recruiters. And I've got a theory in football, Rudy, that it's all about players, players, players. When you're winning games, no one cares about the board, no one cares about the administration, no one cares about the assistant coaches or even the coaches. You just need good players. And it's those two gentlemen, obviously combined with Paul Roos and Gary Pert and Simon Goodwin and a whole host of people, but they're the recruiters. And I think they've been very important in this Melbourne success. Jason Taylor's a funny story. He, I'm told, was an air conditioning guy, went over to do work at Derek Hines' house, who was a recruiting boss at Collingwood, got a part-time job at Collingwood, then got a full-time job at Collingwood. Melbourne wanted to, he was so good, this air conditioning guru who's a recruiter, that Melbourne wanted to poach him, but Collingwood held him to an extra year of his contract, which is fair enough. He was contracted, that he eventually got to Melbourne. So he's an air conditioning expert who's identified a lot of this talent, who Derek Hine discovered, and then he eventually got to Melbourne. How's that for a little story?
That's a ripper. What a great story. And now he's the architect of a list that looks set up for success for the future, like you said.
Now you can stream every AFL match live with Triple M Footy.
People all around us getting excited.
Just download the Listener app and select Triple M. Now you can stream every AFL match live with Triple M Footy.
That's as good as you get.
Just download the Listener app and select Triple M.
Another person important in Melbourne's journey, Tommy, was Paul Roos.
Well, I spoke to Ruzi on Friday one-on-one, and Ruzi won't want to take credit for this, but Ruzi was very selfless in all this. I mean, Ruzi knew they probably wouldn't win a flag during his time. He was setting them up for one. And Glenn Bartlett, who was the previous president I spoke to over here on Friday, in their meeting for the handover plan, said, look, I've got a bit of reservations about this idea of you doing 3 years and handing over, because what happens if we're going well after three? You won't want to leave. And Ruzi was like, no, that's fine. If I see the next bloke hold up the cup, i.e. Goodwin, that'll make me even happier. I'm happy with that. So I think, you know, Paul Ruse does his work nice and quietly. He was very selfless in his process, helped recruit guys like May, Lever, Hibbard. He's been absolutely instrumental in all this and is massive.
Mm. Another big story to come out of the grand final, Tommy, was the time slot of the game. Huge ratings for the night game, but will the AFL keep it at night moving forward?
Yeah, massive TV ratings, over a 65% share for Channel 7. It'll reinvigorate discussion around the twilight or night grand final slot. In person, the entertainment was very good, even at halftime with the sound issues. I think there were some sound issues on TV. But clearly, you know, you're talking about audiences about 33% up on, was 2% up year on year, but 33% up on 2019 in the traditional time slot. So you've already got evidence that, you know, it's very, very lucrative for the AFL, and obviously it's good for Seven in terms of the grand final time slot. But it's my understanding, and I can report this morning on my podcast, Rudy, that I think the AFL is determined to return to the traditional time slot at this stage next year, hopefully at the MCG. I think the view is that Victorians want some normality and tradition and deserve that around the grand final, you know, doing it so tough. And I do think at this stage the AFL will focus, and obviously they'll work through a report on what happened from the weekend, and work through the findings. But I think that there's a determination to still go back to the traditional time slot and you know, restore some, I guess, normality to the event, because, you know, grand final day on a Saturday afternoon at the MCG on a sunny day with a full crowd is still, I think, the best thing in football. So I think the AFL share that view.
Yeah, spot on, Tommy. There's nothing quite like a day grand final. Sticking with the MCG theme, you've got an update on the redevelopment there.
Yeah, the AFL had a close eye on Optus on Saturday night. In particular, the architecture of the stadium. You know, the state government of Victoria has already announced initial funding and planned funding for the redevelopment of the Southern Stand. And the AFL is not just going to do that willy-nilly. They want to incorporate the best design, and Gil McLachlan wants to incorporate the best world standard design into that. It seems like an obvious thing to say, but Optus is a bit of a case in point. There's no shadows on the ground. It's all symmetrical. The stands go up, basically vertical. They're not set back, which means all the seating, it's sort of a new model where you look over the ground. That contributes to the better sound. It's got that incredible lighting, and there's no shadows. There's no towers from the lights. It's all the LED lighting around. So there's a lot of ideas in that, which the AFL is looking at and saying, scratching their heads going, they're not throwing out their plans for the new Southern Stand, but put it this way, they're looking at Optus and saying, how can we keep the MCG 100,000 spectators plus, but also incorporate the principles from Optus. So, you know, the future of the MCG, I believe, will be the MCG as it is, but also with some of the incredible features incorporated of Optus Stadium. You know, the straight up and down stands, that cauldron atmosphere, the lighting, the sound, and some of those architectural principles, you know, shadows, all that's being thought about in detail by Gil McLachlan.
Interesting. That's one to watch there. Really interested to see how that plays out. Let's discuss the Doggies, Tommy, vanquished on Saturday night in their chase for a return to the mountain. What do you feel they need to go again next year?
Well, they need another ruck. They need probably one more defender. I mean, Fritch is a good player, but it's not an ideal situation where Fritch kicks six or seven goals, you know, on grand final day. They also need Josh Bruce back. So I think they'll be looking at a defender, a ruckman, and they're not going to get Bruce back anytime soon, so they probably need another forward. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see what they do in trade period, because they're close, but at the end of the day, 74-point margin doesn't lie. So they're going to have to, you know, there'll be obviously incremental and constant improvement, as Luke Beveridge talked about post-game on Saturday night. But I really do believe they need one more defender and a ruckman. Laddams would be good for them.
Yeah, Laddams would be great. He's only 23 as well and on the trade table, so one to watch there for sure. Now, finally, Tommy, North Melbourne, a bit of change of foot there.
Yeah, there's change at North Melbourne. So Brady Rawlings, the current footy manager, I think they're looking to reposition Rawlings into more of the list management role as the general manager of football, a bit like what Richmond do and split up List and football. So obviously, Richmond, for context, have Blair Hartley and Tim Livingston. North have been chasing someone for that role. Then they looked at David Rath from St Kilda. They also looked at Blair Hartley for more of a football role. I think they're looking at Daniel McPherson from Melbourne, who's sort of the brains behind the football operation, sits under Alan Richardson, and I expect that they could poach him and formally get him in the next couple of weeks, which I think would be a big move for North Melbourne and a bit of a blow for Melbourne. But that's what happens when you win premierships. People come and chase your people.
That's right. Yeah, there's part of the penalty of being such a well-run setup is that people want the guys that help set that up. It makes sense.
Correct.
Just before we go, Tommy, when do Melbourne fans get a chance to actually see their team back here in Victoria?
Well, Melbourne won't have an opportunity now to sort of, they want to do something with the state government and go to the MCG and get Melbourne fans involved. That probably won't now be until November or December, but there's already plans afoot to try and get that happen. They'll get spacing going and separation, all those types of things. Gary Pert's already sort of trying to work through all that. I think Melbourne's already trying to get a Dogs rematch in round one next year. They're already working on that too, where they could obviously unfurl the flag. Wouldn't that be fantastic? The next big issue, of course, is trade, mate. We'll go through that in detail early next week. We have all the big trade stories on Triple M.
Yep.
And also what happens now with COVID and the schedule next year. The intriguing issue for mine is what happens if players will get positive if Victoria's cases keep, as we predict, going up, and that's fine. We'll have to start accepting cases. But some players will get positive. What happens when they go to the club? Does the other players then have to isolate? How does that affect training? How does that affect games? They're all issues the AFL is working through. It's big for AFLW. A lot of the AFLW women work in healthcare. They're going to get exposed to COVID and can't take time off like the men can to sort of travel around. So the AFL's got a lot of issues to work through now. They'll be guided by government. But I sort of feel that the grand final was almost like the calm before the storm. The next 6 months in footy, I think, will be choppier than what anything we've had yet.
As you said, Tommy, we'll be back next week from Monday to cover off all the big trade news. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks, Rudy.
We'll see you in Melbourne.
Can't wait. Thanks, mate.
Shut up. The footy's on Triple M.
Triple M rocks footy.